Hi, my name's Caroline, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Caroline.
And I've been in OA now for, I came to my first meeting about 15 years ago, and I've been abstinent for about 13 years, a couple of weeks ago, and which, when I first came, I couldn't even imagine getting a day of abstinence. And I think what's really helped me over the time that I've been in recovery is the fact that I'm still so in touch with what it felt like to have, you know, that warring sort of sense within myself of what I knew I ought to do with my food and what I wanted to do with my food and how horrible, you know, that feeling of being in front of the fridge and just wanting to eat the entire thing, and how overwhelming those feelings were, and I just didn't know how to manage them. So I think, you know, being able to really put myself still in that place of what it was like just before I came in and you know, got recovery has really helped with that long term of staying in. And I was always a compulsive overeater. You know, I remember there's pictures of me at sort of 2 and 3 years old, like Christmas, with my arms and legs wrapped around a big tin of chocolates and stuff in my face, and that was my kind of happy place, you know, anything around food, and the more the better, really. But it didn't take long for me to start having those conflicts of realising what I wanted to do around food wasn't what you were supposed to. So, you know, the happiness of going, oh, it's Easter and I've got loads of eggs and that's amazing, they're all for me and I can eat them all, but I want to eat them all now, right now, and I'm supposed to make them last, and I'm supposed to have, you know, still have some left at the end of tomorrow, and I don't want, you know, and just that, how difficult that was and how painful that was to have that conflict within myself of I want to but I mustn't, but I want to but I can't, but I want to, you know, and that sort of turmoil and that wrestling within myself of what to do around food. And then that turned into the sneaky behaviour, the deceitfulness, the stealing things out of the cupboard, blaming it on other people, then getting to the point of stealing money to buy food, you know, coming home from school with my whole school bag stuffed with all different things stashed in there, and not wanting to share it with anybody. And then, you know, my mum would clear my room out and she'd find all these packets and wrappers and bits of leftover food, and she'd put it all laid out on the bed to kind of try and shock me into seeing, this is what you're doing, why, you know, this behaviour isn't normal, it's not really okay. And I, there was part of me that always knew that what I was doing wasn't okay, but it didn't have any impact on whether I would do it or not, because it was just this behaviour that I'd always had, and, you know, I didn't really know how to do it any differently. And what I realised was that behaviour was going on all the way up to the point that I went to university at 18. But it had been kept kind of within a boundary because I had, you know, quite a lot of structure in my home life and my parents, family, school, all friends, all the things around me. So although the urge was there, you know, to want to take my eating to extremes, the opportunities weren't there as much as I would have wanted. And I thought, oh, university's going to be amazing, I'm a, you know, top student, top of the class kind of person, I'm going to go off, it's going to be great. And I just had the worst experience. All that structure and the support that I had around me that I didn't really appreciate until I didn't have it anymore, when that wasn't there, I just didn't know how to cope. I didn't know how to look after myself, I didn't know how to manage, you know, being away from home. I didn't really have any motivation to do anything other than go to the shop, buy loads of food, bring it all home, sit in front of the TV, because life just seemed really scary. Going out, meeting people, trying to deal with all these new situations, being in a place where I went from being, you know, a big fish in a small pond to being in this university with loads of really clever people who I felt so intimidated by. And it all just felt easier to say, I'll just shut the door, I won't think about it, and I'll stay at home and, you know, hopefully it'll all kind of go away. And I spent 4 years at university and never got past halfway through the second year because I just wasn't able to apply myself and to focus. And it was around that time I started to think there's something more here than just food. So I got went to the GP. I said, I think I'm depressed. I got tablets. I got counselling and all that kind of thing to try and think, what is wrong with me? I know I'm not happy. I know I'm not well. I'm using food in really unhelpful ways, and I can't get to the bottom of what's going on. And I came to the realisation that university wasn't working for me. Went and came back to London, got a job, but I was going in the morning, working all day, trying to be normal, fit in, and then coming out via the supermarket, two big bags of food, go home and just eat the lot. And that just went on for a period of time. And I was trying various things. I was trying diets and slimming clubs, not very successfully. I tried if I buy everything that I eat in a health food shop, that'll work because it's all healthy, it's all okay, I can do that. I'd buy kind of really expensive things on the internet, like sugar-free versions of things that I would binge on, and think, oh, that will be good now because I won't binge on it because it's not got any sugar in it, and eat a lot within 3 days. Try joining gyms, the self-help books, all the different things. I just was in this constant state of, I don't feel right, I'm not happy, I don't know how to fix myself, but somewhere out there, there's got to be something that I can do that's going to fix this. And it was around that time that I went to my first OA meeting, and the relief of being able to walk into a room and actually say, this is what I am doing with my food, this is how much I can eat. I would go to Oxford Street and eat a lunch in every McDonald's all the way along, which is a lot of them, and I could just this kind of very excessive, very extreme behaviour around food. But even when I tried to go to people for help, I hadn't told them the full story. I said, I comfort eat, which was just so underplaying what was actually going on, because I felt so ashamed of my behaviour and I worried about what people would think of me. And there's a bit in the big book where it says, people tried to help us, but we never told them the full story, so they couldn't give us the support that we needed. So it was a real sense of relief to hear other people share stories similar to mine in the rooms and to be able to get honest about what was going on. But there were some things that I found difficult. The idea that there might be foods that I couldn't manage in moderation, so I might not be able to eat them at all. I'd never heard that anywhere. I'd always heard, have it all in moderation and learn to eat things in appropriate ways. And that sort of put me off, really. I thought, how can I manage to not ever have certain things again? And I struggled with seeing the word God in the steps and in the literature, and that really was a big barrier for me. I'd grown up going to church schools and going to church every week, but I'd never had, it never really occurred to me to actually live my life according to it. It was just something that I'd heard and dismissed and thought, that's not for me, and never thought any more of it. So coming into the rooms, I struggled with that. And so I had a good 2 years of being in and out, backwards and forwards. I'd go to a few meetings and I'd go off again. But during that time, my life was getting progressively more and more difficult to manage. So by the time I, at the end of that 2 years, I was 21 stone. I was having all sorts of health problems as a result of my weight. I was doing a job that I'd done as a Saturday assistant when I was 16, and I was doing it part-time because that was as much as I could manage work-wise. I'd broken my bed, so I was sleeping on a mattress on the floor. Just all this really unmanageable behaviour around food and how it was just ruining everything in my life, really. And what happened was I did an online step study at the beginning of 2006, which looked at step one. And it really went into detail about saying how, if you have this physical allergy to certain foods, that when you start to eat them, you can't stop. But then when you get to the end of a binge and you think, I'm never going to do that again, somehow, because of that mental obsession and that mental twist, you'll find yourself right back where you started, doing it all over again. And if you're in that cycle and you're locked in it and you can't find your way out, what you're going to need to find is a spiritual solution. And for some reason that just, really hit home for me. It was like a penny drop in. And I thought, that is me. I am stuck in that, that cycle, and I just don't know how to get out. And whether I want it or not, I'm going to need to find some kind of spiritual. I really felt there was a truth in it for me. That is my situation, and that's going to be the answer I need. And what I did was I actually went into a residential treatment centre first 6 weeks, and that was my first surrender. I just went in and was like, I'm ready to do whatever you tell me to do. I'll eat what you tell me to eat. I'll write what you tell me to write. I'll say what you need, you know, whatever it is. I'm done trying to figure this out for myself. I'm willing to listen to somebody else and just do what I'm told. And when I came out of there, I was terrified that I'd just walk into the nearest shop and blow it all. But that compulsion and that obsession had been lifted. And I think, you know, the biggest part of it was just that I wasn't trying to be in control of everything, of myself and the world and everything around me anymore. I was willing to ask for help and to actually accept help. You take it on when people were trying to offer suggestions and to help me. And I did all the things that they said in the treatment centre. I came out and I got into meetings and I got a sponsor and I started to work the steps and doing all those things. And I think what I really learned was that there were so many ways of thinking and acting and behaving that I had somehow picked up along the way in my life that just were not helpful for me at all, that were really feeding into this desire just to escape from life through the food, because how I was trying to live my life just was not really working for me. You know, the black and white thinking, the perfectionism, that feeling of I'm never good enough for anybody else, but then being irritated with everybody else because they weren't perfect either. You know, just very... And every time I got myself into a situation, something would happen, my head would just always run away with me into the worst possible scenario. I always knew what everyone was thinking. I could always tell what was going to happen next and what I needed. And I was juggling everything all the time to try and figure life out and manage it all and get what I thought I needed and, you know, all these things. And what I realised was that underneath all that behaviour was that lack of a spiritual connection. And for me, that higher power is a power. It's, you know, the creative force, it's life energy, it's whatever you want to call it, that kind of makes the sun come up and the flowers open, all that kind of thing. You know, that's the concept that I find at this point in my recovery works for me. And what I realised was that I could live my life in the flow of that, and I could live, you know, bring things into my life, people and situations and ways of thinking and ways of behaving that put me in touch with that and that allowed me to be in the flow of, you know, what was going on. Or I could spend my whole life trying to fight against it, turn it my own way, you know, and be going against the grain and going against the tide all the time and battling life. And when I battle life, things get really stressful and life is really tough, and the temptation of to want to take the edge off and to want to use the food and to want to feel better is stronger. And when I can kind of let go and go with the flow, you know, and try and learn more and more about what does it mean to sort of be in harmony with that energy and to welcome that into my life, and to what people, places, situations, you know, encourage that within me, help me to feel more loving, more open, more tolerant, and all those things. You know, if I can live my life trying to head in that direction, the urge to want to overeat goes really quiet because I'm not fighting anything and I'm not battling and I'm not struggling. And it's, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I can be in meditation, feeling really calm, it's all going really well, and I walk out my front door and someone, you know, pisses me off right now. Like something happens, life happens, and it's, what I realise is, you know, rather than it be, I've got to be constantly on my guard and look out all the time, it's just, I just check in with myself, you know, just throughout the day, how am I feeling, what's going on for me, is something bothering me, is something disturbing me, am I feeling a bit disconnected and isolated, do I need to pick the phone up and talk to somebody, do I need to pray about something that's going on, do I need to pick my pen up and do some inventory and do some writing about something, just keeping an eye on, you know, all through the day, like, where are my emotions at? Where's my head at? Do I need to practice some self-care in some way? And I never had any of those tools before I came into recovery. And through working the steps and the tools and what I hear in meetings and being part of this sort of network of recovering people, I've just got so much that helps me, you know, live life in a different way now to what I ever did before. And, you know, the gratitude that I have for that is amazing. And, you know, people sometimes sort of say, oh, you're still doing those meetings, you still go there, do you? And I think, why would I not do something that has been so amazingly helpful? You know, I was having a conversation with someone earlier today and they were talking about this really difficult situation with all these different people who were, you know, there's all these tensions and arguments, and this one said this, blah, blah, blah. And I actually said, I spend quite a lot of my time around people in recovery these days, and we don't really do that. Like, we're quite straightforward, and, you know, if you're bothered about something, you generally try and deal with it. And it just made me feel so grateful for the fact that I've got the ability, you know, thank you, to, I've got that choice. You know, I can not work my programme, I can not do my inventory, I can sit in a resentment, I can get agitated and frustrated about things and self-righteous. But I know what that feels like, and then I also know what it feels like when I do work my programme and I do, you know, give all these tools that I've got the opportunity to work in my life. And, I hope I carry on, you know, choosing to turn towards my recovery and to see, you know, what else it might bring in the years to come. So, yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks.
Thank you, Carol.